Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Stable Connections, the podcast. Today's episode is with Camille Kusin, and she talks to us about living in Germany for a decade, her experience with learning the language, why she came back to the U.S., and what her training program in Pengrove, California offers now. Hope you enjoy. Stable Connections is sponsored by Equine Business Magazine. Equine Business Magazine is the new online magazine for equestrians, equine business owners, and nonprofits. Each issue includes content written by equine industry professionals, offering readers marketing tips, stories, and more. Equine Business Magazine also offers business owners an opportunity to advertise to equestrians, equine businesses, and nonprofits. And a major bonus? This magazine is free to read. Visit equinebusinessmagazine.com to learn more. Stable Connections is sponsored by Bay Mare Designs. Bay Mare Designs is a full-service branding and web design studio built for equestrian-owned businesses. Alicia combines her experiences within the design space and her passion for the horse world to create stunning, strategic designs that help you grow your small business. Learn more about how you can attract your dream clients through branding and web design. She services clients nationwide. Please visit www.baymaredesign.com and receive 10% off when you mention Stable Connections, the podcast.
So thank you so much for this today. And I'm from Novato. I grew up in Novato out on Atherton. And I'm back here close to home in Pengrove now for quite a long break of almost 10 years. I lived in Germany, just moved back in the end of 2021 and have been working here in Sonoma County ever since.
And what brought you to Germany and what age were you when you did that?
I had just finished my sophomore year in college. I moved to LA to go to college specifically for the barn that was down there. And the trainer that I had at that facility was German. And after my sophomore year, he told me he got a job back in Germany at a riding school in Munster. I, of course, was devastated and thought, oh, well, wouldn't it be nice?
Just the idea popped in your head?
If I could go for like 6 months or maybe a year to learn. And growing up, a couple of my friends had gone to Germany and gotten horses, and we were never able to do that. So I had never had that experience. And thanks to my parents, I was able to go with him, even with my horse that I had, which was huge. My mom ended up even moving houses so that we could financially do that. So I went there with him, training with him, and then that turned into working for him. And then it turned into me actually going to school there because I wanted to finish my degree that I had started in LA. And then I actually had a corporate job after that in Germany and was doing horses on the side. And during that time too, I got my German training certifications and my German riding medals. And then COVID hit, so I kept my corporate job. And then all of a sudden it was like 8, 9, 10 years later. And then you really kind of reach an age where you think, okay, where do I want to live for the rest of my life? And I had known for a while that I wanted to be back closer to my family. So that's what brought me back.
And so going back to when you were in school down in LA, what were you studying?
I was actually studying business, thinking of like horse business, training business, how to run a business.
Horse specific though.
Right. It was just business.
Yeah. But you wanted to potentially be in the horse world.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I'd always wanted to be a trainer, which was also hard, like going to college, finding, okay, what can I study that would really be applicable to me later on in life. Business is also so diverse, so I thought if anything goes awry or I decide to go a different direction, hopefully I have that basis.
When you moved to LA, did you think you were going to stay there?
Or it was to just, live afterwards?
Yeah.
No. I did not like LA.
Okay, why didn't you like it?
I just don't like the traffic. I mean, I had some really great friends in school, in college, and I really liked the barn that I was at. The people were amazing. But for me, it was like too close to home to really like not be that different, and also just far enough that I really wasn't home. And it just, you know, a lot of people, a lot of congestion. It used to take me like almost an hour sometimes to get to the barn, and it just wasn't my home.
Yeah. And so specifically when you found out your trainer was going to go back to Germany and that thought of like, what if I could go too, came in? How did that conversation go?
I think my mom did it.
Okay.
Like any grown adult, because we were actually in the process of buying a horse at the time. And he was kind enough to let us know before the deal had gone through that, you know, don't assume that you buy this horse and I'm going to be here to help you. So
that's a nice, respectful thing
yeah,
to do.
He was very like honorable and honest in that way, which was great. So we said, okay, we'll get the horse and then we'll also go with you.
And was it always dressage for you?
Yeah, so growing up, I did a little bit of everything. I think I started out with Pony Club at Redwood Pony Club, which was with Pat Duffy, who's still doing what she's doing over on H Lane in Novato. And we actually grew up the street, so I would just walk there every day after school. So with that, we did a little bit of everything, like some show jumping. We did like cross country, but like children's cross country. And then through her, I got my first pony, who's a Connemara from Ireland. And my mom actually still has him in her backyard, retired. And with him, I did like every type of thing a kid could do with a pony, that poor little pony. We did team penning, barrel racing, jumping, pony club events. And then I ended up showing him, like, I think up to fourth level dressage. So once it did kind of funnel down to dressage, I had him for quite a long time doing that.
Yeah. Do you remember the flight to Germany and what that felt like? Were you anxious?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was stressful because we had to leave like in the middle of the night. And it was me, one other American. My trainer at the time was already there. And then we were traveling with four horses. So we had to leave like in the middle of the night.
With the horses on the same plane?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. With the horses. I flew as a groom. My mom had come down to like drive us to the airport. So of course it was like emotional and just making sure. I had never flown as a groom. That was the first time. And I also had this new horse. It was a lot of horsepower. I mean, I was excited for sure. I was excited, but it was a lot. And by the time you get there though, you're just so exhausted. You're just kind of like,
you're here.
Ready for a bed and a hot shower somewhere. You're covered in horse slobber and hay and water. So yeah, it was a lot.
Is there anything that stands out in your first week that you want to talk about in terms of either excitement or hardships or just like something you experienced in
sure.
the early stages?
Yeah. So I remember my horse actually got quite sick. He probably had like some underlying small infection that got exacerbated through the plane or through the flight and all of the traveling. So that was really scary because it really wasn't looking good for a while. And I also had in the back of my mind everything that my parents had done to get me to this place.
Mm-hmm. Almost like this guilt of like, we get here and now you're sick. Yeah,
totally. And not being able to speak the language. So like I didn't understand what the vets were saying. I was totally reliant on my trainer. So just feeling very dependent and probably a bit helpless. So that was the first stages, but he eventually got better and we carried on.
Yeah, that must have been rough. And so was it pretty easy for you to start learning the language and how did you do that?
Yeah, no. It's a weird language. Once you know it, of course, it's quite fluid. When I first was there, I think probably after a couple months, I wasn't working yet. I was still only a student training. So I enrolled in some language courses. So that was like Monday through Friday for like maybe 3 or 4 hours. And that obviously helped a ton. And the really cool part about that is I was like the only American in the class. There's people from all over the world who come to Germany to go to college. And you have to pass this German language exam in order to study there.
Oh, wow.
So okay. They were all preparing to study. And you get 2 years on a student visa to just learn the language. So that
2 was...
2 years?
Mm-hmm, wow.
That's how long they say it takes to really get that proficient that you can study.
Yeah. Not me. I'd probably be longer for me, but yeah.
I know. You'd be surprised. Because I was just, like, thrown in cold water, you know? So
yeah.
That was also a good thing. Like, the beginning, I didn't have any friends. But everybody speaks, like, a service level of English. But I was also like out in like a little village in Horse County. So like being able to order coffee and croissants was like sometimes a struggle.
you just point.
Yeah, I know. You would think, right?
You hope the person in front of you got the thing that you
yeah,
want. You're like,
exactly that. Even how you signal to is different.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you do
this?
It's so, oh, it's an L?
Yeah, it's like an L. I'm always, just give me a coffee, please. so that was really cool though because I met people from all over. like Saudi Arabia, Australia, a lot of people from China.
Well, the Australians kind of speak your language.
Yeah, totally.
Sort of, sometimes.
Sort of, just a different dialect.
And so what stands out to you the most about your experience in Germany? So you said you were there 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So what, are there any specific years that stand out that were the most fun?
I would say probably once I kind of got my act together with riding.
Okay.
And not got my act together, but really like turned from like a passenger into a rider, because riding there and riding well is just the standard and like it's just normal. And unfortunately there is kind of like this culture like around Americans going to Germany that nobody can ride that well and all this stuff, which has changed over the years. But back then it definitely was kind of like the connotation. So I had some really great shows with my horse, and they were like local shows, but still, like, you go to a local show there and you're riding with Ingrid Klimke and Helen Langen Hunberg. So doing well even at a local show, it's like, okay, you're doing something. On the right path. Yeah,
yeah.
So that was really rewarding, and that's definitely when I think for me kind of the shift into like, okay, I can really do this, just putting your mind to something and working hard at it, even if you're not the wealthiest or like even the most like naturally gifted. If you're dedicated and just keep working, Germans will teach you that. If you just keep working and keep sweeping the barn aisle, eventually you're gonna get better.
Yeah. When did you feel like you spoke the language enough to get around?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say maybe like a year into it. So there were apprentices at the riding school that we were at, and they were all my age, which was awesome because I immediately had like people to hang out with and friends. But it very quickly became apparent that to have anything deeper than like a surface level conversation, you have to be able to communicate. Like when things are wrong or like you're having difficulty, if you can't communicate with that, then it's really hard. Like it's easy to then get homesick. So I was really lucky to have that. So I was really like submerged and immersed in it. I would say a year, but it definitely took me a while. I think I attempted that like German language exam twice before I passed, just because I didn't have like the super structured learning path of it. I definitely had some structure at the beginning, but really the rest of it came just through like living there. So I would say 1 to 2 years.
Yeah. And what did the housing situation look like when you were out there?
Yeah, so at first it was interesting. So the riding school we were at, they used to do clinics to do trainer certifications. So they had some apartments there that were actually above the barn. So I was able to live above my horse, which is really cool, in this little apartment. But it was like 2 people to an apartment. So when there was a clinic going on, it'd be shared, and like no kitchen, like just very basic. And I didn't have a car. And I remember at some point getting a bike, but it was like a children's bike, so it had no gears. So like, I remember like having to bike to the grocery store to like get food and stuff. But again, I was like 20, so.
It was doable.
I could do it, yeah. Now, no way.
Yeah,
so that's where I lived at first. And then eventually I shared an apartment with the other American. And then when I wanted to have some place of my own, I got an apartment closer to the city center.
Okay. And did you like where you were living in terms of, like, the city?
Yeah. The city is amazing. Münster is a great place. And the area we were in is like the hub of dressage. The Olympic German Training Committee is like 20 minutes away. So you're just surrounded by horse people of all disciplines. And the Young Horse Championships that they have every year is held in that city. So it's like in our backyard. And the city itself is so charming. It was rated 1 year like the most livable city in Europe.
Oh, wow.
It's called the City of Bikes. So like everybody, I think bikes outnumber the residents 2 to 1. So it's just like bike paths everywhere, like a lake and a university, even 2 universities. So it was a great city.
Yeah.
I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. You said you finished school. So you did go to school at some point once you passed the test. And what was that like?
Yeah, it was also totally different. So I started out doing business administration again, but I hated it. It was much more like mathematical based there, and the way that Germans and Americans learn math is totally different.
Oh God.
So there were, yeah. So like, I'm not a math person anyway, but then having to do math plus then having to learn the units, centimeters, liters, like everything is different. So it was a lot for me. So I ended up switching after I think a year from business administration to real estate and property management, which I then loved. And for me, I thought it would be super applicable because I always wanted to have a horse property to run and be at and train out of. And my parents are realtors, so I always had this interest for real estate.
Yeah, that sounds like a random switch.
Yeah, I know. To somebody maybe who like doesn't connect the two. But for me, it was great because it was like a mix from business to some like building engineering, also like communication, economics. I liked it. I didn't love it because there was also still like some physics and like the engineering side was difficult with the units that everybody in the world uses except for the U.S. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad I did it. And what was amazing or is amazing with Germany is that you can study there for free. Mm. So even as a foreign citizen, which is why it attracts so many people from, you know, other countries.
As long as you pass that test.
Yeah, as long as you pass, as long as you have like this level of German, pass the entry exam. Yeah, so I got my degree there, you know, at no cost, which was amazing.
That is really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Do they have an actual like graduation ceremony like we do here?
No, I'm trying to think back if I had a graduation ceremony. I don't think, oh no, I think I did. Obviously it wasn't so amazing that I even remember it today.
Doesn't sound like it really left a mark.
I think it was just like they read off, like you're together and they like read off, but it's not like a big thing like American style. I think it was before COVID hit, or like maybe at the time COVID hit.
But oh, so for some you reason, finished your degree kind of later on.
Totally
in your 10
late.
Years there.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
What was COVID like
in Germany? It was strict. It was like at first nobody knew what to do.
That's everywhere.
Yeah. And then the good old Germans love their rules, so they put in a lot of rules into place. But I think, I mean, it was fine. We were really lucky, my now husband and I, because we, in that time, we moved, or like before COVID hit, but after we both graduated, we moved into like a nice ground level apartment with a garden, and we had our dog, and we could both work from home. So we were super lucky, and like, you know, no kids, don't have to worry about like staying home from school. Mm-hmm. We both were able to keep our jobs.
Your barn didn't close or anything?
No, it didn't close, but it was just like only necessary people, so like owners, and we would have to track like when we were there and stuff like that to follow it, but we were all still able to go.
Yeah, that's awesome. And what was it like in terms of needing to go grocery shopping and stuff?
Well, to be honest, I never go grocery shopping. My husband does all of that and all of the cooking. It's bad.
No.
I have tried to cook for him, but it's only been about twice in the span of 7 years, so it's not the best.
At least you've tried.
Yeah, I've somehow survived before that. But I do remember during COVID, this company that did like grocery delivery started. So that was a thing. But we were able to go grocery shopping, but I do remember when COVID first hit, my husband's birthday was coming up and I wanted to bake him a cake and I had to go to like 4 different stores to get flour. So it was crazy. People were definitely...
Everyone was baking there too?
Oh, baking
making bread,
toilet paper. Like just
everywhere.
That was universal.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thought it was maybe just...
I know. I would stock up on chocolate, but like I would not...
Toilet paper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was totally universal.
Huh. And so what was the conversation like in terms of like, should I move back to the U.S. and all
yeah.
that?
Yeah, that was like a multi-year conversation between me and my now husband because he's from the area. And like I said, we both had great jobs. I ended up getting a job in asset management at T-Mobile in Münster out of college, which was great.
So were you also working at the barn?
Yeah.
So you were kind of doing both.
Exactly. Yeah. But I had flexible working hours at telecom, so I was able to start really early and end early, like at 3, and then from 3 until the evening I would be at the barn. But yeah, so it was a couple year long process to really get to the point where he and I were both, you know, taking it really into consideration that we would move back.
Yeah. And you knew if you were to move back that you would move to Sonoma County, Marin area?
Definitely.
Yeah. And how did you guys meet?
Tinder.
Ooh, Germany Tinder.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it called Tinder as well there?
Yeah. But okay. This is also like people hear this and like, oh, Tinder. This was a long time ago.
This was before Tinder was what it was.
This was before Tinder was Tinder. And like when we met, I was still working. So like, I was working like 15-hour days, 6 days, if not 7 days a week. So the poor thing, he would like send me a message and he'd get a message back like 3 days later like, I'm so sorry, I've been working so much and I have no internet data at the barn and like all this stuff.
But he's still here.
He's still here, yeah.
And do you want to talk about your first date?
Our first date was, I can remember it exactly, and I know exactly what he was wearing because the shirt haunts me.
But, no. For people that don't know, you guys don't know, he's sitting right behind you, yeah, exactly. Hanging out with us.
I can't look him in the eyes right now. So, he was a student at the time. I was still working, but like thinking about starting to study. He lived in student housing close to like the, I say a cafeteria, but it's totally different in Germany, like where this huge cafeteria was at the lake in Münster. So we met there and then we walked a lap around the lake. And then I think we moved my car because I was in like 2-hour parking because I show up like an American in a car instead of a bike or on my feet. And then we went out to dinner. And then I think we went and watched like 1 or 2 episodes of like Big Bang Theory and then said goodnight. And I remember very vividly thinking, like, I'm never going to see this guy again.
Oh, interesting. Because of his shirt?
No. No, it's quite endearing. I make fun of it, but it was cute. It was, like, one of those, like, sweater shirts with, like, a fake collar coming out. So it looks like you're wearing a button-up under it.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about this shirt is, like, I was trying to get rid of it for years. And a couple years ago, I went to go help his mom move. He wasn't there, but I went with my horse trailer, my car, to go help his mom. And I'm in his old room, and I'm like, what's this bag? And the shirt is in the back. And she lives, like, hours away from where we lived. So it's the shirt that haunts me, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Did you guys do, or did you personally do any kind of, like, other things while you were in Germany other than horses or working?
I did travel a little bit just because it's so easy to get around, which is great. So I had a friend come out once from the States, and we actually ended up taking the train to Prague, which was like this huge train ride, but it's awesome. It cost like $80 or something. We were there for a couple nights. I went to Italy, Spain, so just like some small vacations. Yeah. But I was really there just for the horses.
Yeah. And did you start your own training program while you were out there, or not yet?
No. Mm-mm.
Just
yeah, I had like 2 or 3 horses in training and then some students, but not like a full-time program.
Cool. And so when you moved back to the States, your now husband did not come with you. You came, it sounds like, by yourself and then started your training program. So do you want to talk about that?
Sure. The plan was for us to like just be apart for like 3 months. So I thought, okay, I'll move out like in October, and then you'll probably be there like February, so I can get everything settled and whatever, a car and a house and cell phone and all that stuff. And then with COVID, and then what also came on top of that was the Ukrainian war, the processing times for our visa, just instead of taking like 6 months, it took 2 years. So we ended up being apart way longer, but surprisingly, I have to say, like, for us, it was super easy.
You got better at communicating by then?
Yeah. Not cooking. But
not cooking.
Yeah, exactly. So I came back, started the business, and we just kind of kept doing that until we heard. And he couldn't travel into the U.S. once his visa was past a certain point in the process. And I obviously couldn't leave all the time to go to Germany because of my horses. So we met once in Mexico. He came out here once in the early stages. I went there probably like 2 or 3 times.
Yeah. You made it work.
Yeah.
And what was it like starting your program, and what were some of the hardships once you did come out here?
Well, it's totally different here. I'm really lucky because I grew up in the area and I've always had like some really good supportive core people, like outside of my parents. I grew up riding with Jeanette Duramalar in Novato, who's just always been not only an amazing trainer, but also just person and mentor. So like through any hardships or frustrations, she was always, always there and supportive. And then in terms of starting the program, it was difficult for me because I like to be quite private. Like I've never had a website or like even like a business Facebook page. Like I don't like to put myself out there in that aspect, or like I work really hard for everything that I do and like do it with so much integrity and really just because I want to be doing what I'm doing. So it's also like a fault of mine that I don't maybe like branch out as much as I should. But here in the States, there's so much like promotion and like Facebook stuff and postings and all these like social things. So that's definitely been something for me where it's like, I know I need to kind of like put myself out there a little bit more.
So what did you do in those beginning stages to get clients? I believe you moved into a local barn and maybe there were some clients there already.
Exactly. Yeah. So I got quite lucky because I moved into quite a large facility in the area that has great like accommodations and super location. So I moved there just with two client horses that came with me from Germany. Then the rest of my group just stemmed from firstly just boarders there. So that was really lucky. And then I think kind of being in the middle of that hustle and bustle of a busier barn, kind of the word got out. And then I brought a couple people in there, which was great. And there was also another trainer there at the time who just was also awesome. Like, we're total opposites. I'm like short and wide and she's tall and small. But somehow, like, it was just, I really enjoyed like having that other person around and just like somebody who understands what level you're on, not in terms of like riding wise, but I just mean like day to day, you know.
Emotionally.
Exactly.
The emotional level.
Exactly.
Energy level.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I started. And then I actually got approached by another local barn manager in the area. So I moved to her facility, which was also, again, a great spot. I kind of restructured my business because this wasn't a boarding facility. So I was lucky that I was able to bring a lot of clients in there with me. But it was different because there were no boarders. And because I don't really put myself out there as much, it was difficult to like get more people in. But what I did enjoy about that is I was also in charge of the horse management and the horse care, which is for me like 80% of the job. Because if like my horse isn't happy or like I know it's not getting what it needs in terms of its general well-being, it's difficult for me to then actually be able to train it with a clear conscience or like ask it to do what I'm asking it to do, knowing maybe the day before it didn't get turnout or like it got the wrong hay or, you know, all sorts of things. So it was a lot more work, but I really, really appreciated that aspect of it.
Yeah. And did the business side of things come easy to you?
I think so. I think in comparison to like some of my colleagues who I've talked to and just some feedback that I've gotten from clients, I feel like I'm not, you know, the best organizer, the best communicator, but I've gotten good feedback in terms of that. And also what was really helpful for me working at T-Mobile was just like having that business level of communication and also like a little bit of IT skills to be able to do all the billing and all the accounting and budgeting. It's really important. And I think a lot of people don't realize looking from the outside how many aspects there are to being a business owner and being a horse trainer.
Yeah, definitely. It's not just that you're out in the arena teaching.
Playing
it's,
in a sandbox.
Yeah, it's all those other behind the scenes, whether you hire out for it or you do it yourself.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
There's a lot of aspects to it. Let's see. So what do you feel like in your training program that you offer that's different than other trainers locally?
That's a good question. Well, I think number one, we're really lucky to be in this area because there's a lot of great people and great trainers around here. Also something that I thought I would miss in Germany, but it's great to have that here too, to be able to lean on other people, especially as a professional. There's going to be a horse that I don't click with or can't get through to, so I need to have that other colleague to have a call and just brainstorm with. I think what I bring to the table is a lot of like time, love, attention, and dedication. Not saying that others don't do that. And then on an educational side, obviously I went through like a huge process to get my trainer C, trainer B, and trainer A in Germany, which is like a 4-year process.
That was part of the riding school?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Exactly. And also like the riding medals, which just focuses on the riding, but the actual training certifications is theory, practical, and then also teaching. So it's not just how you ride, but also like teaching you how to teach, which is an art of its own. And I think unfortunately in the States, I know they're trying to work on that process, but it's super expensive and it's not accessible to a lot of people.
So it's not mandatory yet. So
and
there
it's
are
not mandatory.
Trainers that maybe shouldn't be.
Correct. There you cannot train if you don't have a certification. Also what's unique to my business is now that I lease my own property, I'm again managing like the whole horse's lifestyle. So like all of my horses who want to live out can live out. I have got one who hates living out, so like she lives inside, but like the previous property they were at, like every horse had to be turned out, so she was just in her turnout stressed all day, you know. So being able to have that diversity and really being individual, it's a big barn, but I have got like 12 horses here and like that's just plenty, like because I really want to make sure I can focus on every aspect of every horse. And it's just a balance. Like, could I be making more money? Yes. But, like, would I be happy doing that? Probably not as happy as I am now. Again, like, I had a really secure, comfy corporate job, which I definitely earned more and had more job security and paid vacation and health insurance. So, like, I do this by choice because I love it. So I really try to always keep that in the front of my mind. It has to be fun for everybody, horses and me. And for me, that's the only way I can really enjoy the day.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And do you feel as though you're a better rider or trainer?
I think every rider, if you ask them, they say they have days when they just ride horribly and, like, cannot ride. I think especially riders are really self-critical of their riding. I would say it totally depends on the horse. There's also some students I've struggled with to, like, find out which language or how I can convey what I have in my mind to them. And then there's other students who are on, like, kind of like the same wavelength as me. So, like, that communication's really easy. And the same thing with riding. There are some horses that I have where I'm just like, it clicks right away. And some where you feel like, oh my gosh, I cannot ride, you know? And I think also for riders, it's important to remember that that's normal.
That you all feel that way.
Yeah. Sometimes we all feel like flubber up there just plopping around. So,
yeah. I know. When you and your now husband speak, do you speak more English or German?
We always speak German.
Why is that?
I think when we met, that was the language that we spoke in. So, because I was on German Tinder.
Did you put that you were an American on your...
I don't think so. I think I probably had, like, an emoji of horse and an emoji of chocolate. And that was probably, like, my description. And, like, maybe some pasta. I don't think there was much on there. I do know there was one picture with a horse.
But you had... He had no idea that you were an American? It would be surprising if he comes to meet you and you're like, hello.
Yeah.
Good day.
Good
How
day.
Are you? And they're like, oh.
And I was like, ew, bye. It's like, is this a catfishing?
Oh, God.
Yeah, no, we speak German. And just because, like, that's the language we've always spoken. If we're, like, a social scene, like, around my family or, like, with other people who are speaking English, we'll always speak English. But it's funny because it is really nice to kind of be able to have, like,
your own
little
language.
Yeah, and it can be like, honey, don't say that, like, really quiet, or like, he can tell me something and, like, nobody knows. And a couple weeks ago, we had a bunch of friends visiting from out of town, and I looked at him once and I was like, we can't, like, secretly communicate anymore. This is horrible. So,
well, it also keeps you remembering the language.
Totally.
Too.
Totally.
That's
yeah.
Awesome. And that was probably awesome to hear when he could finally come here. So what was that like?
Yeah, that was amazing. You get no information from the United States Customs and Immigration Services. Nothing. So, like, not a peep for, I want to say, June 21 until August 22. And that was just, like, when the first step had processed. So that was, like, the first sign of life that we got from them. And then when it was finally approved, there was a website you can always just check the status, and it said, like, your visa is processing. And it was late at night, and I was like, ugh, like, don't check it. Like, it's going to be the same as always. And so I hit, like, refresh, and it's like, my visa has been, or, like, is approved. And I was like, what?
You're like, am I hallucinating?
I know. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to bed. No, I, like, refreshed it, like, 3 times. And it was late at night, so it was early in Germany, so I called him. And I don't know if I was crying or just, like, so, yeah, we were just overjoyed. And then it was like, okay, well, here we go.
Here we go.
Exactly. Yeah, but it took, even from the time, I think it was approved in January, and he moved out here in May because he had to quit his job and, like, give notice at his job, which is, like, a 3-month period there. And
it's 3 months there.
It
where
is.
Here it's 2 weeks, isn't it?
I know, it's crazy.
If people even give that.
Yeah, that has also been a huge adjustment. But it's a 3-month termination period. Also, in our apartment, we had to give 3 months notice. And then he needed, like, a month to get life in boxes.
So moving here.
Yeah.
You ship a bunch of boxes? Is that what happens?
Yeah, so we definitely weeded out a lot. And we had my good friend and her boyfriend took over our apartment. So they luckily took over a bunch of the furniture. And we were able to sell a lot of the furniture. In terms of stuff, I was able to bring a lot with the horses. In terms of, like, bulky items. So I had it as, like, tack boxes, but it was, like, shoes and jackets.
Yeah.
Which
you don't have to know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, this is for the barn.
It's a horse
blanket. Exactly. And then he sent a couple of boxes. I was there like two or three times. So every time I went, I would go with like two empty suitcases and bring them back full. And then he came with a couple of extra suitcases and then shipped like four boxes.
Cool.
We did pretty good.
Let's go into the question. So what is something within the community that you want to see evolve or change? And then how can you help with that if you're not already?
I would say something I would love to see continue to grow is the sense of community. I already think it's getting or has gotten much, much better. And I think a lot of that has to do with the age group now of trainers in the area. As you know, we have like a trainers group that's just like a basis of support for any questions that come up, from like, I'm having difficulty with my barn owner, to who does blanket cleaning, or like, I need emergency hauling. So like having that sense of community, I think, is really important, because we're always going to be in the position where we need help, and also in the position where we can help others. So I think seeing each other less as competition and more as colleagues.
And then how can you help with that change?
I would say I help with that change by also partaking in these trainer groups. And whenever I go to shows, I always make a point to say hi to everybody, you know, make sure everybody knows I'm there if they need help, and vice versa. Asking for help, like just being vulnerable. I don't know everything. I have problems, and I know everybody else does. And admitting that and seeing that and knowing that isn't a weakness. It's really a strength. And I think my clients that I've had for a while have stuck with me because they see that I don't pretend to know it all, or like that I can do it all. If I'm having a problem, I'll tell them. Or if I need to ask somebody else, I'll tell them that. So I think just being there for others and making sure I'm always also a part of that conversation is something I can do to help with that.
Yeah, definitely. Lastly, you get to ask me one question.
I would like to ask you, what is your motivation to do your podcast?
I love talking to people, and especially in my older years, I love one-on-one conversations. I recognize that groups, I get much more quiet. But one-on-one, I just enjoy chatting with people. Yeah. And I just really also like podcasts. And a specific one that I would listen to, all he was doing was interviewing people. And so I was like, huh, I could do that.
Yeah.
So I love connecting with people. I love hearing people's stories. Something recently that's come up is I love when people cry on their podcast episode. And
yeah. It's,
you know, just the vulnerability, or not necessarily crying, but just opening up about things, you know. It makes me feel good that people are open to me sharing their stories.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, I'm able to give a unique perspective because I'm not in any sort of specific discipline. I try my best not to be non-judgmental towards people, and I just try to be friendly with everybody.
Yeah.
So the motivation is just because I enjoy talking.
Yeah.
Or I guess it's more that I enjoy listening.
Yeah, and connecting with people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my motivation.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for chatting with me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Hello again, and thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Stable Connections, the podcast. This is your host, Shauna Burke, and if you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, don't forget to tune in every Monday morning for a new episode. Follow us on Facebook and on Instagram. It always helps to leave a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on Facebook. And if you or someone you know wants to sponsor an episode, please visit www.stableconnectionsthepodcast.com. See you next week. Stable Connections is sponsored by Equine Business Magazine. Equine Business Magazine is the new online magazine for equestrians, equine business owners, and nonprofits. Each issue includes content written by equine industry professionals, offering readers marketing tips, stories, and more. Equine Business Magazine also offers business owners an opportunity to advertise to equestrians, equine businesses, and nonprofits. And a major bonus? This magazine is free to read. Visit equinebusinessmagazine.com to learn more. Stable Connections is sponsored by Bay Mare Designs. Bay Mare Designs is a full-service branding and web design studio built for equestrian-owned businesses. Alicia combines her experiences within the design space and her passion for the horse world to create stunning, strategic designs that help you grow your small business. Learn more about how you can attract your dream clients through branding and web design. She services clients nationwide. Please visit www.baymaredesign.com and receive 10% off when you mention Stable Connections, the podcast.